space programs, aliens.
They took off my right arm, then brought me back to life.
He never renounced the Nazi party. He did come to Jesus. He was a very different person.
Most influential alternate personalities.
Taken out of body, sent to a Celtic god for training.
So the grandfather was a Hitler. He was an evil person.
Very.
A Nazi general.
Ancient kingdoms, time travel, secret space program, hollow earth.
The church portal or gateway for the government programs.
Worked for very, very large tech organizations and people. They were like, oh
that makes that, sense.
Yeah.
You're listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall.
You're listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. I'm Dan Duvall. And today I am joined with not one, not two, but three guests. And my guests are all sisters. They are survivors of satanic ritual abuse and government projects and share a unique experience because they are in relationship and in fact doing life together in many ways. And so I'm going to introduce you to Emily, to Amanda, and to Andrea. Welcome to Discovering Truth.
Thank you for having us.
We're going to have fun.
Yes.
It's going to be okay. You guys relax. You know, it's not going to be, this is not an interview for a job. You know, but thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. I think this has been a long time coming.
Yeah, probably.
You know, you guys, I met you for the first time several years ago. You guys came to one of our Bride Tribe advances.
Yes.
With other members of your family, actually. Mm-hmm. And got heavily triggered when I hit Tuatha De Danann. Mm-hmm. And I found out about elves and fae kingdom and other exposures that you guys have in your lived experience. And I think our whole community of coaches has, well, at least a large number of them has met you guys individually at one point or another by this point. And you guys have definitely colored our understanding of a whole number of line items between the three of you and your brother and your other family members. And so, but I'm happy to be sitting down and talking with you guys today. And with that introduction, I want to just open up, I think, and just talk about this. So we talk about a satanic ritual abuse, mm-hmm. right? And all of the different facets of that. The reality of how it's done, the dissociation that it leads to, the reality that's happening at all, which some people are still trying to contest. We're pretty far past that. Now, you guys, having been through that, you know, you live in the same house. Mm. Can you explore with me a little bit about the emotional and spiritual dynamics of having a history of satanic ritual abuse, government projects, and then choosing to do life together as adults?
Yeah. Who wants to go first?
I guess right off the bat, all of us at some point have stepped out of living with each other during moments of deep healing. So everyone's kind of lived separate during certain portions of coaching. So even before coaching. So God, I think, has been strategic with how he's had us live together, because now I would say we all have phrases, words that we use where we're like, okay, I'm having an emotion, I need to take a break, or hey, I need help. So it's been a team
effort.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that we all have at least I did go away for school. So mm-hmm. I did have like time away from my family. And that was some of the hardest time of my life. When I was 18, I did move out. And mm-hmm. so like I wasn't sheltered in that way of like never knowing how it was living with my family. And we've decided to live together because like when we all moved to Los Angeles, like the three of us moved to Los Angeles, and in LA having roommates is like necessary for survival.
Sure.
And so that's sort of when, that's why we started living together that way. And it's just carried over when we moved to Houston. And during that time of just all the siblings living together, we've really had to work with communication. And I think, yeah, there was one point where when we were getting different people were getting triggered, we had a whole emoji chat because there would be times where we couldn't talk. It's called like nonverbal, mm-hmm. You go nonverbal. And sometimes it's like you can't, even typing out I'm not okay is like, or I'm triggered is like too much. So we would just have like emojis that we would send of like the level of how long we needed to be away from each other. And
that's very honest. Yeah. No, please.
Yeah. So
and having separate spaces also helps. Everyone yeah. has their safe space.
Yeah. And our parents, like, I kind of make the joke of like I was Christian out of the womb. Like, yeah. Like yes. Our parents are Christian, and they fought to become Christians and to get to where they were. And they raised all of us, you know, loving Jesus and having a relationship with God. And so like for the three of us, that carried over into how we treated each other. Mm-hmm. And we had to do like a lot of research of, you know, how to communicate with each other. So like the spiritual aspect of it, we would pray together. Mm-hmm. You know, we would pray, we would listen to the Holy Spirit and listen to God about like when to maybe leave each other alone. But there's definitely been a united front when we have faced opposition.
Yeah.
Andrew, did you want to add anything?
Going back to what Amanda said about all of us having time where we've left yeah. for a certain period of time, usually that's for like a month or a couple mm-hmm. months at a time. And it's usually when something really major, before finding your, ministry, mm-hmm. One of the events was I had a handler basically in my life. And after trying to recover from that relationship without having the correct resources, I actually went to England for a month to visit a friend, and stayed there until we were able to work things out at a distance. Mm-hmm. And so that entire time we were still praying together and in communication and trying to figure out, okay, what do we need to rebuild in order for us to live together again safely?
Because yeah. so, we'd send prayers to you yeah. during that time too.
And then that happened with when we all started our healing journey with your ministry. Emily actually moved away for a while for something similar.
Wow. So and do you guys find that, you know, you have trigger words that you don't know that are pulling up each other's programming at times or parts? Do you have parts that get in fights beneath the surface at times?
Yes. Like with each other?
Yeah.
Not as much anymore. But
well.
But at the beginning, when we first started, like, you know, going through healing or not having healing at all, there was a lot of infighting mm-hmm. because we're sisters, and something that we found in our family is like, depending on what lineage our bondage or the programs we were in leaned to, mm-hmm. it would affect our relationships. Yeah. And we call it cross systems.
Yep.
And it has taken, I would say like every day for a very long time, and even now, us being able to have the relationships that we have and have the trust we have, it has been a daily choice of grace and love for our family members and for each other. Because like it has been a choice, because it's not been easy, but particularly when we've all been like super triggered and it's been a healing journey for like months at a time for that one person to get that healing in that area. It was a struggle and it was a choice to support and love each other through it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
There's a lot of like when the infighting with the parts would happen. I know it happened between me and Emily a lot. We got into this like communication habit of being like, okay, well, you're triggering me currently and I have to step away. And eventually that became kind of like there was a body language to it after we had gone through it so many times, where it was like, okay, if I just walk away and just leave and close my door, that means I need time away and alone to figure out what's going on. And usually both of us individually would work with Jesus and figure out what was going on and try and talk to the parts and go through prayers to figure it out. And then we'll come back together and be like, this is what was actually going on. This is what triggered me. This is the programming that was happening. What was your side of the story?
Yeah.
And then
generally at that point, we would pull out your books and go, okay, now I'm feeling it's this one.
Hours and hours of prayers with your books before there was like before we took care of a lot of the overview stuff.
Yeah,
we were spending I think one time all of us sat down together. Yeah, it was like 6 to 12 hours, and we bashed stuff out. Like with the Freemason stuff, we went through, I think it was
the Dr. Ron Horner's book
of Freemasonry. We went through that entire thing together. We would take turns going and getting each other, like filling up the food, getting snacks, getting drinks, going to the bathroom, and one person would pray a prayer. And then the next person would go, and we just were going roulette. Like it was a fight.
Yeah.
And honestly, with Andrea talking about the her and I, like the infighting that we were having in the parts, and her having to like walk away.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that we've really had to be honest with ourselves about is being able to be uncomfortable with waiting for the other person to be okay to talk to them. Because it's like, I'm the person that really wants to get things done right away. Like, I don't like people walking away, but I've had to learn to have the grace and to be okay with my being uncomfortable by myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, that's one of the interesting things about talking to the three of you at the same time, because in a lot of the, I think, journey that, like this podcast has taken with exposing the reality of mind control and satanic ritual abuse, we're often looking at it through the lens of the individual experience. We don't look at it often through the lens of what is it like to journey with others that are familiarly related, that are also choosing a healing journey at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, for a lot of survivors, it just doesn't work out that way. It doesn't work out that what were core relationships for them continue to be once they choose Jesus and decide to break rank with whatever the cult scroll was for their lives. It becomes a very isolating experience that then they have to take a journey with a new family, hopefully the body of Christ and Jesus as their new best friend. In your case, it's been very different. And that's been one of the things that I've also been able to watch come kind of from a distance in some ways, but watching you guys take that journey in relationship, because that has created some interesting dynamics. I mean, we're going to get to some of those other interesting dynamics. But with that said, let's unpack the before we get to maybe some of the memories, the bloodline itself.
Mm-hmm,
okay. I want you guys to talk about what do you know about your bloodline that has contributed to the iniquity that has created havoc for your generation?
Okay. Where do you start?
ancient.
Okay.
You start ancient. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us have had to come together with not just like what we know about like our bloodline history and like the actual like ancestry of it, but also the spiritual side of it and like the revelation that God has shown. Because Andrea was very instrumental in some of the Germanic stuff that we have. And Amanda as well. And it's been interesting because there's four of us in total. And the two older siblings and the two younger siblings, our bondage and the stuff that we are finding out are kind of one side of the lineage and the other side of the lineage.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess it leans more so in one direction than the other.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's like overlapping, but like you can tell where one of us has been through, like we lean more towards something else. For the older two, it's a lot more Fae and Irish side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Fae is short for
fairy. Well, Fae is actually the correct term. Fairy is another version of it.
Yep.
Fairy is a subrace of the Fae.
Yeah.
Got it.
But the Druidic, the yep. Irish Druidic, the Scottish side of it. And then
Anglo-Saxon. Yeah. Yeah. Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, yeah. All of that.
And then the other two are
more Nazi German, going back to all of that
space
stuff.
Programs.
Yeah, space programs, aliens, a bunch of.
So it's like above and below kind of stuff, which is actually some things that I have really had to, like, that has really targeted me individually is like, we've got the space stuff and the middle Earth and hollow Earth stuff.
Okay.
So.
Tell me about your grandfather.
Okay. Who should take that one?
Well, he was a Hitler youth, trained and programmed to be a general, I believe.
Yes.
He was going to be a command in the Nazis.
Yeah.
A Nazi general.
We know he was one of the original people in our bloodline to do 20 and back programs.
He did multiple from what I could sense, but that's
he was a very scary man to me. I couldn't really talk to him or be in a room with him for very long, especially alone. I was always very, very terrified, and until I found your stuff, I was like, why do I fear this man as much as I do? And then turns out he did a lot of the trauma to all of us. So
He was taken at like 7 years old from what we have understood, because he wasn't they were immigrants. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't very open with the different stuff. We know that he was taken to a Nazi youth camp and was raised to be a general, and didn't really feel bad about it even towards the end of his life. And he was incredibly emotionally and mentally abusive. And our dad has been an incredible man being able to heal from his trauma. Like our dad's journey for what he went through as a kid, being raised in that, has been tough for him. Because he was, he went through a lot with our grandfather. So
anything else? Dad did break the cycle, though.
Our dad repented from the narcissism that was on our grandfather, so that was a very, very big breakthrough. And that was before. That was like when he was. Right when he got married to our mom, he made that choice to cut that off. And so that was very good.
So the grandfather was a Hitler youth.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Willingly.
He was an evil person.
Yes. Very.
You guys seem to suggest was also connected to a space program of some sort.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the term 20 and back. And for those of you in the audience, that essentially means that they will take a person's soul out of their body, put them typically in a clone or some alternative bodysuit, and run them through a 20-year mission, sometimes on, sometimes off planet, and then time shoot them back into their body from the point of departure. So your you're saying your grandfather was part of that.
Yes. Yes.
Have you guys had some of your own 20 and backs?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, we'll get to that.
Yeah. And,
he was also an abuser to you guys.
Yes.
Yes.
You have Fae Kingdom, Celtic, Druidic, Germanic. What does the term Yggdrasil mean to you?
So, the Yggdrasil is the Yggdrasil tree of Norse mythology.
Yep.
One of, it's supposedly a tree of life, but it's more so a realm tree, the nine realms. And it's one of the most, like, ancient pagan religion places of power that stuff is pulled from for magic. And it's been very, very tied into our family because I think that, and honestly, I think it comes more from our
mom's side of the family. Is that, yeah?
No.
No, it's
grandma. Grandma and grandpa, the Germanic side, the Norse.
Okay. The Norse, it's also side. The Celtic, but
yeah. We don't have all of the answers for our family ancestry. Like, we haven't done an ancestry.com, which, you know.
And our family did not keep good records.
Yeah. So we know, as like legally, we know that like where our grandparents kind of came from, but the war broke a lot of it. And they would not talk about like where they came from. Like, they lied for years about coming from Germany.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. They said that they came from Lithuania. And that they were not German. So they did not say that until like later on. And then our mom's side of the family is so broken, and the maternal lines are I think the maternal lines are more intact, but a lot of children by different fathers.
Okay.
So it's a little difficult to know exactly where all of it comes from, but we do know that Yggdrasil is a major part for us.
And for you guys, Yggdrasil isn't just some kind of like mythology that, you know, makes its way into books from time to time and some Marvel superhero lore. It's it's actually an actual world tree of bondage connecting realms that you guys have had to interact with.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Goodness.
I personally have not had to interact with it yet, but I don't know if I will in the future since these two are dealing with it.
All right. So let's go back to, because we're going to come back to, because I'm going to ask you some specific questions about that. But let's come back to your childhood. So you mentioned there's the two older and the two younger. So we have one sibling that's not here. What is the birth order?
I'm the oldest.
Okay.
Second oldest.
Uh-huh. Third oldest.
And then the baby.
And then the brother.
Okay.
Yep.
Now coming back to the foundation of satanic ritual abuse. All right, so you mentioned your father was the son of a Hitler youth. Obviously, he went through a lot of trauma. But in some ways, he's a cycle breaker in your bloodline. But you guys were still exposed to satanic ritual abuse. Now, where did most of your known satanic ritual abuse occur? And can you unpack what that meant for each of you individually? Do you want to start it? Amanda?
A lot of mine came from grandparents on both sides of the family, and then a lot of trusted church members, a lot of families that we were entrusted to keep safe. They were plants or handlers, and most of it came from them.
Grandparents.
Yes.
And the church.
Yes.
What kind of church?
AG.
AG. It was an Assemblies of God.
Yes.
Okay. And so you guys all attended that same church?
Yes.
Were you guys all abused at that same church?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a little bit of the nature of that, and then I'll move to the next. Mm-hmm. But what was the nature of some of the things that were done to you?
I would say for me, a lot of it was the church was more of a portal or gateway for the government programs. They used religious processes, but they were primarily government or Freemason and government programs for me. And then that also with dad's side of the family, grandparents, they were also government. So there was a lot of tie-ins between the two, at least for me. So
for a little bit of context, our the church we grew up in became like a mega church in the area. Mm-hmm. So it was a very, very large church, very predominant. So a lot of things were able to fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it ballooned to the point where it was harder. It was easier to get away with things.
Yeah.
Because of how big the church was and how many...
The church went from, I would say, between 200-ish to
several thousand.
Yeah, several thousand to packed services
in a few years.
Yeah.
So, but I guess what I'm asking is, so how did they do this? Like, did they take you into a basement? Did they just have a barn? Did have youth camps? Like, what was the?
Yeah. So youth camps, children's church, often during. Choir practice, they would take me specifically to areas in the church for training. That was in the smaller building. And then when they got to the bigger one, most of the time it was they would hide it with like gym classes, going to the gym, in the showers. They would do water training. And then
what do you mean by training? Just explain.
So I was more, I was in two different programs when I was younger. I was in, I'm not quite sure what the program was for, but I know that I got removed from it fairly quickly. And then I got moved into, a assassin training program. So I was 3 when I got moved to that program, and I was in there until I was about, the timeline's fuzzy with that one, so probably between 10 and 11. And then I got too damaged to continue and was removed from that program.
So and again, like, how did they train you?
Some of it was, some of the memories are still fuzzy. A lot of it that I'm remembering right now is basically like Ninja Warrior Extreme. I know I practiced on live targets with different weaponry.
How did they get you to those places?
Again, the gym classes, they would have a overlay so with technology so that parents wouldn't be able to see inside. It just looked like a extreme gym class, but there were trainers. There were people that weren't a part of the church that would come in from the back because of how many different doors there were. They would just come in, separate the, like, the kids that weren't in the program, and then put up like a shield.
So the gym that she's talking about that she would be taken to, it was, there were 3 walls on either side, and then there was a glass. And then there was a glass
window.
See-through window that you could look through. And so that overlay that she's talking about, they would put over the glass.
They would put a hologram in there, and then they would have, the gym could be divided into 4. So they would have the kids that were in the program separate from the ones that weren't
Yeah, let me explain a little bit better about how that gym was set up, because I'm remembering. Guys. So the gym was as large as four basketball courts. So it was a massive gym. Yeah, and on top of the gym, there was a walking observation area. Mm-hmm. And so when you were walking through the like cafeteria, because it doubled as a school. Mm-hmm. So when you were walking through past the gym, that entire wall was glass. Every other wall surrounding the gyms were solid. And they could pull and giant panels across the gym from every angle to block off sections of that gym. So they could basically have an entire basketball-sized court cut off from anyone else seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and these were solid walls, basically, that they would pull through. And on the top, there would be a little bit of netting. So you would still have the airflow and stuff. But that is essentially how it was set up and how they would be able to separate the kids. And I remember being a kid and being separated from Amanda.
I also remember in that gym, they would tell you, no, you can't go into that class. No, you can't look past that wall.
Yep. Yeah, and they wouldn't even let us like, look past the wall. We would get yelled at, you can't go over there. And I would be, I'd want to be getting to her because I'm like, why am I not able to play gym with my sister?
Mm-hmm.
And I would go over to the wall and I'd get yelled at. They wouldn't let us go past that wall.
Yep. Yeah.
And they would separate the three of us because we're different ages.
Yeah.
And they would make sure, like, we're only a couple years apart. Like,
yeah, we're three.
And they were
half.
Very intentional at pulling us apart.
Yeah. We were always very angry about that.
Okay. So I hope that explains how that.
Okay. That's a very large gym. Mm-hmm. And I know what you're talking about in a sense because, I've seen gyms of that size.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. So what you're saying is the church owned that.
Yes.
And then they would pull the kids into that. They'd actually wall off stuff. And so are we talking about during like a Sunday morning service?
Yep.
You Sunday have morning children's service. Church. They'd send the kids to the gym, sequester parts, and then children that were part of the project would go into a certain area.
Yes.
Now,
and then they would have the trainers that weren't a part of the church come in from the side gym doors. So
I was, the whole back the back wall that was up against the parking lot
would open up to the
doors.
Yeah.
Okay.
They could just go right out.
My goodness.
Yeah. I would say Sundays I wasn't taken off the premises just I know because the training facilities were so advanced at the church itself, so they didn't need to. And typically when I was taken on missions, it would be through going to a church member's house where they would then take me from them after our parents dropped us off or dropped me off. And then they would take me to wherever I needed to go.
Now, okay, so we use the term satanic ritual abuse, but were there actually satanic rituals happening on a Sunday morning?
Yes. I don't think I witnessed several. I don't have memories of taking part in those specifically.
But what did you witness?
I don't really have clear memories of it. I know that there were, specifically there was a drowning ritual in where they would do baptisms and I was made to watch and they would drown. I don't know who it was, but, kids.
Was that on a Sunday morning?
Yeah, that was on a Sunday morning. They could wall off that area because it was up above the entire sanctuary. So it, yeah.
No, it was. Now thinking about how was set up, why is the baptism up above
it's
all the worshipers and
60,
above all
70 feet up in the air.
And it could be blocked off. Yeah, I never realized that.
That's an altar because they could spotlight it. Mm-hmm. And so when they would do actual baptisms, they would unveil the baptism. Literally, a veil would come and, like, unveil the, like,
baptism area,
and they would spotlight it and play music. And it's like, that seems like a ritual in itself in a weird performative way.
And then...
But so that's where she's talking about, that they would take them, because it was that... It was soundproof, that, like, auditorium was very soundproof.
Yeah, because they also did plays, at least 5 productions a year.
They would eventually do. They stopped doing that, but yeah.
Yeah, eventually.
Oh, so, and the Sunday morning rituals, there was also this family that was our friends and babysitters as well. That was, they would do pray in tongues at the altar. And they were not praying in tongues. They were just doing some satanic ritual stuff at the altar on Sunday mornings.
Yeah. That particular family was one of the ones that transported me a lot. And they had that particular family. I would go over there at least once a week for several years. And they had a tunnel underneath their house in the basement. And the father would take me and his oldest daughter to... the house across the street, through the tunnel, and through the back door. They would take us to a facility. I would typically be drugged during that time, so I don't know how far away it was. But I do know that his daughter and I were in completely different programs. And he was very not happy about that, because she was... of the program, I think hers was more church infiltration. And I know that she was in seduction training, which it is one of the reasons why they stopped being handlers, because our dad caught that one time where she was practicing. And
over at our house.
Yeah. And he lost his crap and was...
Well, no, it's a little, so our mom, let me clear that up. Our mom.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask some more questions. But yeah. Go ahead.
So specifically about this family that mm-hmm. she is talking about, mm-hmm. they were very, very good friends with our parents. Mm-hmm. And.
Very high members of the church as well.
Very yes. high members of the church, some of the founding mm-hmm. members, and they were also Freemason.
Okay.
They became friends with our parents.
Okay.
We had a lot of people seek us out. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how, you know, handlers do it. And then, what Amanda's referring to specifically is an event where our mom saw this little girl, mm-hmm. On a, basically on the play set, acting like she was being used and like actually acting like she was in the middle of an act.
Got it.
And our mom, and this was like when she was like, what, 5 years old?
Okay.
Five or six. Seven. Like she was.
It was around seven.
7 years old? Okay.
Yeah.
So, and our mom basically told our dad, and then they confronted the parents. Uh-huh. But another reason why they confronted the parents is because back when VHSs were a thing, mm-hmm. and you could record onto VHSs, right? They let us borrow some VHSs with some old TV, because we weren't raised with cable.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we were watching this VHS, and it was a very, very long one, and it ran all the way to the end, and at the very end of it was pornography.
Oh, wow.
Like, horrific. I am talking about horrific pornography on there. Yikes. Like, I don't even want to, like...
I think it's fine. Not go into it.
Are we talking like snuff pornography? Are we talking...
We're talking about a human and animal.
Okay, bestiality.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what all I can say and explain and say, but yes, well, it was bestiality. Yeah. Okay. But it was bestiality, torment, torture kind of stuff.
Wow.
And that was at the end of this video. Mm-hmm. That was like, an old like Anne of Green Gables video or something.
It was I Love Lucy.
Mm-hmm. And our mom and dad had like found that on that video. And then they confronted the parents about it.
Yeah.
And that after that is that's the incident Amanda is talking about. Like when yeah. our parents actually confronted the church and would keep confronting the church about weird things that they were doing, like we eventually basically got ostracized
yeah.
from that church.
Okay. Yeah. But this took years.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
over those years, what you're saying is you were exposed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Through the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know Andrea has several more stories as well. Mine,
okay.
yeah, I don't really remember much from the church. I just know that churches have never been safe for me.
Okay.
Up until recently.
I have like super detailed memories, but I do know that it was a lot of the babysitters, and the church had like the children's church, and like you would go there multiple days a week for like it was all based on the Rainbow Girls of the Freemasons.
Oh, well, there you go.
So they had all those classes growing up that you would go to on Wednesday nights and stuff. And during those Wednesday nights, or when you would go to the babysitters just during the week, and they were all, our babysitters were all people who were running those programs.
Mm-hmm.
And they would take us during, I think, Sunday school as well. And then on those programs and, well, being babysat. For me, it was different places in the church building. I don't remember everything that would happen in those places, but I know they were kind of like hidden, like off in corridors. I remember when first getting back memories and stuff, I would have lots of dreams about going through weird corridors in the church that I was like, I know I've been there, but why is it so windy and stuff? Like, I don't know what's going on with those dreams. So that kind of opened up like,
I know we've
there's stuff in the church that was not public.
Yeah.
And they would also take me to military bases. So okay. they would traffic you through the church. And then I know there were tunnels under the church that they would use to get you to the military bases.
Yep.
Okay. Now let me just ask this question. What was the proximity of your local town military base to the church? Are we talking 2 miles, or are we talking that's, like 30, 40 miles? Like what's
I that think a it was question. I think it was pretty close. Like I can't yeah. actually like say for certain how far it was, but from like the way it feels, it seems like it was only a couple miles.
Yeah.
Because we grew up in quite a big city in between two cities,
mm-hmm.
Like two major cities. So the city was pretty big and it was pretty well known for human trafficking. So there was already a bunch of tunnel systems.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would not surprise me that they set up a military base in that area to do the trafficking and all the other stuff between the two major cities.
Or bullet train to like get you there faster.
Yeah.
There and back. Like underground. Kind of trains.
With the amount of
have you been able to get the memory of going underneath the church, seeing the tunnel and being transported, or is this just I know it happened but I haven't gotten that memory yet?
I can get glimpses of like the tunnels.
Tell me a glimpse.
They're like really large tunnels.
Okay.
Very big.
Uh-huh.
I don't even know if we have vehicles that are big enough to go through there, but it's like you could fit like multiple trucks in the tunnels going through.
Okay. Like multiple semi trucks.
Yeah.
Side by side by side by side.
Uh-huh.
Could drive.
Yes.
They were that large.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then this was underneath the church. According to what you remember.
Yes.
One of the transport platforms was. So it was connected to the network.
Okay.
Yeah. There might have been smaller tunnels. I'm kind of getting a glimpse of smaller tunnels that are like going into the bigger tunnel.
Uh-huh.
But the main one that I can remember is that really large tunnel.
For a little bit more context about that church, it was the ground. It was built from the ground up.
Okay.
So they did not take over a building. They built the building on top of acres of land.
Sure.
So before any other development took place in that area. So there would not have been any other buildings really around to hinder any kind of construction.
Mm-hmm. They also built a hospital behind it.
Okay.
Later on. And, right and the, behind it.
The board of the church were Freemasons.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And so what we're looking at is the reality that this whole church may have simply been in operation. Yeah. It was certainly governed from the top by people that were connected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The money that funded some of this expansive, I mean, we're talking about pretty extraordinary facilities here. Millions of dollars would have been required to build this extent of structure. I mean, and they had it,
mm-hmm.
and in a relatively short amount of time.
Yes.
Because you guys were only there for how many years?
Well,
maybe 10, or I'm just throwing a number out there.
I was 13 when we left.
Okay.
Yeah, I was around 15.
And were you there your whole life that you know?
Yes, as far as
we grew up in that
church.
Yeah,
we grew up in that church. Okay. Dad, I know, would use the term jokingly, kidnap us from children's church and take us to the zoo fairly often because he would not, he did not like us being around the church after a certain point.
After a certain point in our time being there, he started like pulling away from the church because it was after him calling out the church.
Yeah.
And before we move on, I wanted to just mention the thing about the rainbows Freemason thing. That is the daisies and the prims and the stars. It is a thing that is in a lot of really large churches. It was very, very popular back in the 90s. It is based on Freemasonic rituals and
teaching
and order climbing,
mm-hmm.
Because you basically are degrees mm-hmm. in each of these little things, and it is from it can be from like when you're 6 years old up. And so I just really wanted to say that for anybody that kind of grew up in that kind of stuff, like you're made to say an oath
mm-hmm.
for every badge you earn,
mm-hmm.
and so there's a lot of I had to do a lot of like deliverance 101 for the oaths that I made that I would be a good, humble wife, always serving my father and they don't say God, they say father, or serving my church and the pastors. And you would say that at like 7 years old, some of the oaths that you were supposed to take.
And
you
would say that every class.
Yeah.
Our mom actually did teach my class and Emily's class throughout the years. She would like switch off which year she took, and because she was also
I only remember her teaching one class, and I remember after that is when things started falling apart at the church.
Yeah, it was, she taught mine three times, I think, and then you twice, and then there was the fallout with the choir.
So I think I'm getting enough of a picture here, enough to understand the dynamic of how you were abused or targeted or accessed at the church.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other one that I do want to let you guys kind of be just a little explicit about, so you said you were abused by your grandparents and they were involved in, I assume, ritual abuse with you guys. Do you actually have any of those memories?
Yes. Yes.
What happened?
I don't have the memories of it. Mine, again, was a different situation. Andrea, do you want to?
Let's talk about it. Okay. Go ahead.
So I'm very open about the fact that I have DID. My grandfather made a lot of those altars. One memory I have is, he took me out to the, he was visiting our family. We didn't live in close proximity to him. He was a few states away. So one time when he was visiting, when I was like, I think 4 at the time, he took me out to the wetlands behind our house and just left me there. And I was supposed to find my way back and survive. And so that was an experience. And those wetlands were very hard to traverse as a child. So that was one. And then another memory I have is before I was actually even born, when I was still in the womb, I was actually, me and my mother were abducted, and my grandfather was there, and him and Satan and some other big names in the technology field were there doing some kind of terrible torture to me in the womb, basically opened my mom up and took me out and did some crazy stuff. And that also created some alters. So yeah, he was involved in that process, and he was the one doing a lot of the handwork in the torture. So,
wow. Now, that's severe. But you guys are all in relationships, so you have that memory. You don't remember anything about him.
Correct.
And do you?
I have bits and pieces of memory. There was one specific ritual that I remember where we were on their property, their farm, and he took me and there were two other men they had a man-made pond in the back, which was a portal to the underwater kingdom. And they did sexually abuse me, but they also took off my right arm and bled me out into the water. And then put it back on, and then brought me back to life after, and then they drowned me, and then brought me back again. I don't know why. I don't know what the purpose of the ritual was. I do know that it definitely created a lot of parts during that time. And I know several parts were just taken, and I have gotten them back. But they were primarily in captivity and used as batteries for transport systems in the underwater kingdom.
So, I'm so sorry. Now, the language choice. They took off your arm. You have both arms.
Yes.
So, by what means did they do that and reattach?
Surgical tool. And they used basically a large scalpel around the joint, and then they popped the joint out. And the way that they reattached it was like Star Trek. They had they basically rebuilt the tissue around it using
some sort of technological device.
Frequency and light technology. There was some a liquid crystal that was put into the joint that basically fused. I know it created a false cartilage almost in order to hold it in place while the healing took place. But I was very dizzy and was only half paying attention. That's what I remember.
So your grandfather had access to technology and connections that are, I mean, clearly this technology is way beyond anything we have publicly available today.
Mm-hmm. I know for a fact some of his parts worked for very, very large tech organizations and people. So definitely had access to technology that is not publicly available. But yeah, so definitely had access to those types of technologies, especially because he was highly involved in all the space program stuff.
Yeah. I know that there were several times where, not a ritual, but we would play with orbs of light that would show up on the farm, that would come and get messages from him or bring them to him. And then they'd stick around and we'd play with them in the barn.
That's an actual memory.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, that I do remember. And yeah, one of the neighbors actually
took a picture of it.
No, one of the neighbors actually had talked about it recently when I at our grandfather's passing. Mm-hmm. So within the last like couple of years, he actually brought that back up and talking about us playing with those orbs of light.
And so they didn't know what they were, and neither did you. No. You just knew that they could play with them.
Mm-hmm.
So this was also some kind of technology.
Yeah.
You say it's Nazi technology?
Yeah, I would say it's, Nazi technology, because he never renounced it.
Yeah.
He never renounced the Nazi party. He just didn't talk about it anymore. And he, towards the end of his life, within the last like few years of his life, he did come to Jesus. But he was a very different person. So I don't think there was any of those parts of him left that performed a lot of this evil.
Let me ask this question. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's clearly very evil. He abducted your mother with you in her belly.
Mm-hmm.
In your memory, how long ago did you retrieve that memory?
Sometime this past year.
This year?
Or, no, so about 2 years ago was when, like, the initial memory and the initial information of it came in a session.
Uh-huh.
And then more recently, I think end of 2024, I went back into the ritual and was getting more details about what had actually transpired.
You know, and just to give you a little bit of validation, I remember a client that I had, and she was resistant to go deep into the memory, but one day in session, we were recovering some different things, and she was mentioning almost as like a passing thought, oh yeah, and that's when my dad, he would lay me on the bed and he had these tools and he would just open me up and take my organs out and then put them back in.
Yep.
And I was obviously flabbergasted, and it's because to a mind of a person that is not part of that world, that sounds both far-fetched and beyond, like so cruel beyond reason. And what you're describing is even like a step worse, because you're the baby inside. Now, you're talking about this. Obviously, thank you for talking about it publicly. That's very brave. In discussing this, like, because you are in connection with your sisters and your brother and your parents, like, what was the feedback you got when you said, for the first time, I remember this?
Well, to these guys, they were like, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Lines up with some crazy emotions and other stuff that they're getting back. I don't know how much detail I described to my brother, but I'm sure he also wouldn't be surprised. And I haven't actually fully explained this to my parents, so if they watch this, it'll be the first time they hear it in detail. But I have kind of told my mom, I'm like, hey, there was some weird stuff that happened and you had to do this prayer and that's linked to a ritual that I've looked into in my memories. And so I know they'll be shocked, but I know they'll also be able to come to terms with it because they are also on their own healing journey and want to start figuring stuff out on their own.
Now, do you think, okay, just processing this live a little bit, like if he had access to technology that could repair a injury, I mean, not injury, but
an amputation.
An amputation. I mean, something that severe, that this kind of activity on that degree may have happened more often, and that's part of the reason why you guys all lack so many memories behind your preteen years.
Yeah.
Definitely a part of it. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was... I was able to spend some time with him in his last, you know, few years of life. And I was literally the only one that stepped up when the call came in, essentially, to someone needed to go spend some time with him. And I was the one that went after much, much prayer. Because I didn't really have any memories. I just knew, like, he was part of the Nazi stuff. And he would – I did not see any of these evil parts of him in the time that I was living in his home with him. And I do believe that he, in some unconscious way, had – was repenting for some of it. Because he had a picture of Jesus that he would spend all day just staring at and just praying. And I actually was able to pray some of your prayers with him.
Wow.
And he would just, I remember one time that he would say, I remember one time when him and I were talking, he was talking about how good Jesus was. And how Jesus was his friend. And so, and that that Jesus was just basically the forgiveness that he knew that Jesus was capable of. So he did such terrible things, but I was able to, I think, facilitate some of his healing. And maybe because I don't have the memories, I think that might have been the grace of God to allow some of the family trauma to be healed. Because he repented for things without even realizing what he was repenting for.
Fascinating. So, wow. Now... each of you has met a number of alternate personalities. Mm-hmm. You all have them. Yes?
Yes.
What are some of the most influential alternate personalities you are each aware of and a little bit of their job description?
You want to go first?
This is your joy spot.
Yeah, I love talking about TID. I have quite a few. I don't know if I want to give their names.
That's okay.
But I have one of the biggest influential ones. All of them are male for some reason. I'm still not 100% sure why I have no female alters when I am female myself, but... there we are. So one of the main guys, he actually was made before I was born, so still in the womb, and was composited with my spirit. And then at two, he was composited with my spirit and sent through
a simulation that basically made him lose his mind, taken out a body, and then sent to a Celtic god for training to train as a tribute to Satan. And tributes are actually a category in Satan's altar army, basically. So soul army. That is basically the equivalent of a commander general. So you have the tributes, and then you have people called the host, which host the princes of hell, because the princes of hell have their own dominions that they oversee, but they want someone in hell to work the armies. And then you have Satan himself. So my altar was a tribute, and he got the position of Celtic tribute, and then got to work under Satan and Beelzebub for quite a while, and did some terrible things, enjoyed torturing people. He worked in both the physical and the spirit realm. He was given a physical body at one point, brought into the physical through a ritual.
Which was not your body,
right,
that we're talking to.
Right.
Another body.
Yeah. They basically made a clone body
for the
altar. Yes. And then, so he did a lot of that stuff, and then somehow ended up, through a series of events, dying by an angel, because he was sent to battle them, I guess. And apparently when you're stabbed by an angel's weapon, you die, because usually they can bring a lot of spirit beings back to life very easily. When you're hit by an angel, you can't do that. They can't bring you back. So he ended up at the gates of hell, and Jesus came and got him and was like, "This one's mine, you can't take him." And then he met Jesus and was taken to heaven and got some healing. And now he's been on my side since I was like 11. So that's one of my main guys.
He was put back in this body.
Yes.
And then you engage him. And when you engage him, does he sound like a voice in your head?
So originally, when I wasn't aware of how to talk to my alters and engage with them, it was like, it sounded just like my voice. And then the more I engaged with them, the more they started getting a voice of their own, and I was able to hear what they actually sound like. But in the beginning, it was definitely just like, is that my thought? Was that just my imagination? Was I just throwing that thought out there?
Yeah.
But it's like, you got to grab the thought and be like, okay, that doesn't sound like something I should know or something I would say. So that was probably someone else. And then eventually you start being like, okay, no, that's your voice. Now I can hear his voice. And he's very clearly, I know when he's talking to me.
Wow. Thank you for that. So yeah. How about you, Amanda?
So for me, some of my oldest alters are the ones that have the most influence in my system. I have probably, I would say 10 that help every day rotate. And so I guess I'll just call him E. He was my second altar that was made. He was one that was created by my grandfather. And he actually did he time traveled back to Babylon and was a high priest in the temples, had a physical body for a number of years, and then was sent back after his contract had been ended, and then was in system since then. But he was the first Christian in system as well, because he knew what the other gods were doing. And yeah, he's one of them. Another one, M, she knows a lot about the Yggdrasil tree. that we were talking about earlier, and she was in Loki's court for a number of years and was stuck with him for a while. Did like a lot of deceived people. She thought she loved him. And then, but she was always like, you know, I'm part of Amanda. I am, she's my first priority. So she found out that she, in a coaching session, she was causing difficulties 3D, and Loki was trying to have her take over my body. She found that out and immediately flipped and was like, no, that's not my place. That's not what I'm meant to do. And she has been pursuing healing for herself and for me ever since. And she's one of my primary cheerleaders.
Wow. So this is kind of what I'm going to wrap up with here. So what I'm hearing is, okay, you guys come from a bloodline mm-hmm. that includes Druidic roots, Celtic roots, Anglo-Saxon roots, Germanic roots, Nazi roots. Your grandfather was an extremely evil person and a Hitler youth. Mm-hmm. He was responsible for programming the family. I'm sure your dad did not escape his influences. And not only was he involved, but your church was run by Freemasons. It had connections underground through tunnels to different locations, which included the military base, and they had a way to sequester things that allowed you guys to be accessed while at church, and the church people themselves were also in a way handlers, traffickers, etc. That trauma foundation allowed for the creation of parts inside of you that were then given roles in various realms. Some of these realms connect to the realms of Yggdrasil, at least in your case, Amanda. Some of these realms connect to, I mean, ancient kingdoms, time travel, secret space program, Hollow Earth. I just kind of threw that one in there. Said anything that is not true?
That is all true.
That is all true.
That is true.
So we have to continue exploring this because I have more questions. Because now that we understand how you got to some of these places, I do want to ask about some of these places. And so, friends, we'll be back in a part two where we're going to explore the secret space program, ancient civilizations, Hollow Earth, and how the parts of these individuals, because of their bloodline and exposure, were sent there and had all kinds of experiences there as well. Now, present to give these ladies all kinds of information that is going to blow our minds, I'm sure. You've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Till next time, God bless and Godspeed.
You've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Visit me at danduvall.com where you'll discover merch, books, and the opportunity to engage in our private social network. Join the tribe by subscribing to our email list and supporting this podcast.